Good morning, everyone. Here at the Maryville Church, for the last several months, we've been studying a series called King Jesus as we've been walking through the Gospel of Matthew. And we're going to continue that series this morning as we're ready for Matthew chapter 24. And I tell you, this couldn't be a more relevant message for what we're dealing with in the world today. You know, the clock is ticking. It was in 2010 that the Pew Research Center conducted a survey of American Christians, and it found that 48% of us believe that Jesus is either probably or definitely coming back in the next 40 years. And that was 10 years ago. Many cultural shifts, political conflicts, natural disasters, and the threat of pandemics have likely contributed to this perception. Christians have always believed that Jesus is coming soon and that the end of the world is near. But Jesus points you and me to the fact that it's not really the timing that is important, but rather, are we living in a state of preparedness and anticipation of the King's return? The question of the King's return is foremost on the disciples' minds in Matthew chapters 24 and 25, and this morning we look at chapter 24. In verses 1 through 3, the disciples and Jesus are traveling from the temple, and the disciples notice the impressive structure of the temple itself and the stones that comprise that grand building. And as they observe it, Jesus points out that the time is coming when all these stones are going to be torn down, which of course the disciples are naturally curious about that statement, and they ask Jesus questions regarding that. Because for them, the destruction of the temple would be such a monumental event that they assumed that it would mark the beginning of the end of the world itself. So they ask Jesus two intertwined questions. Number one, when will these stones be thrown down? And secondly, what will be the sign of your return and the end of the age? The disciples are asking for the timing of the temple's destruction and the signs that they can watch for, at least in their minds, that would signal the end of the world. Jesus answers by showing that there is an approaching day when a time of judgment is coming upon Jerusalem, and it will feel like the end. Yet the King's ultimate return will come at an unexpected time. Though both these events feel interconnected in many ways, and certainly did to the disciples, Jesus shows the commonality and yet the separateness of these two events. First, in verses 4 to 35, Jesus addresses the King's judgment of Jerusalem. Jesus begins by providing several clear signs that will signal Jerusalem and the temple's destruction. Now notice carefully verse number 34. It's a key verse in the chapter. Jesus says that all of these things, that is all the things he describes in verses 4 to 35, all of these things will happen during the lifetime of this generation. He starts out in verses 5 to 14 speaking about the signs they can watch for that would mark the impending destruction of Jerusalem. He says there'll be false messiahs, there'll be wars and rumors of wars, there'll be natural disasters, the persecution of believers that will happen while the gospel is spreading to all nations. And those events would be precursors to Jerusalem's destruction. But then secondly, he moves from the signs of Jerusalem's destruction to the actual day itself in verses 15 to 28. Jesus says this would fulfill Daniel's prophecy when the Romans would come in and desecrate and destroy the temple, which they did in AD 70. He says when that time comes, he warns them to flee to the mountains, which we know historically Christians did as they fled to the mountain fortress of Pella when the Romans came in to destroy the temple. He says pray that that time would come when you flee from the city, that it wouldn't happen in the winter or on a Sabbath day, so that it would make it more difficult to escape. False prophets are going to try to mislead you, he says, about the timing of what is happening. But Jesus says, when I finally do return, there'll be no mistaking it. It will be as clear as lightning in the sky or vultures circling the dead. And yet, the destruction of Jerusalem would provide a foreshadowing of the eventual apocalypse and the end of the world. We see this in verses 29 to 35, when Jesus draws upon the heavy apocalyptic language of the Old Testament that described God's judgment on nations. He vividly describes Jerusalem's fall as being accompanied by the falling of political powers, which is described symbolically as sun, moon, and stars. This was language often used in the Old Testament. For example, when Babylon would fall, it was described as the falling of these heavenly bodies like sun, moon, and stars in Isaiah 13, or the fall of Edom in Isaiah 34, or the fall of Egypt in Ezekiel 32. But like a sign, Jerusalem's destruction would point toward the king's eventual return to judge the world. Jesus gave these signs for his disciples so that they could escape when Rome came to destroy the city, verses 32 to 33. But keep in mind, verse 34 says, all these things were about to happen within their own generation. It's in verse number 36 and following that Jesus then changes the subject to the king's judgment on the world. He says in verse 37, but about that day and that hour? What day and hour? Verse 37 shows the coming of the Son of Man. He says, that day and that hour, there's going to be no warning. It's going to be unlike the signs that pointed to Jerusalem's destruction. Unlike that, the king's return is going to happen in an unknown time. He says, that day or hour, I don't even know when it's going to be. The angels don't know. Only the Father knows. It'll be similar to the days of Noah when the flood came. It'll be an utter surprise with no warning, just like an average day. But in an instant, there'll be a separation, and one will be taken and one will be left. So Jesus says we need to live in a constant state of readiness because no one knows the day, and it's going to come like a thief in the night. So we need to be ready and live in a constant state of readiness for the king's return. Jesus says in verse 44, you also must be ready because the Son of Man will come at an hour when you do not expect him. So we need to be ready, friends. I'm not convinced that this pandemic is a sign of the end of the world. But I am convinced that what is happening right now is a wake-up call to all of us. That we need to be reminded to be prepared for the king's return. We don't know when that's going to be, but we need to always live ready and prepared. So I want to talk now very practically about what we can do in uncertain times, what steps we can take as Christians to prepare for the king's return. I've got five quick suggestions. Number one, please, 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 don't fear the hysterics of people. It is so easy to get swept into hysteria and fear. But Jesus tells us very clearly during his ministry that we are not to be afraid of those that can kill the body but cannot kill the soul, Matthew 10 and verse 28. In fact, Hebrews 2 says that Jesus came to free you and me as his followers from the slavery of continually fearing death. So let's not get swept into that hysteria. Secondly, let's prepare for the king's return by more and more falling in love with the king. Those who don't bow before the king have a reason to fear his return. Revelation 1 and verse 7 says, on that day, every nation is going to fall down before him. Even those that pierced him will bow their knees before him. But followers of Jesus should not fear his return. In fact, we should long for the return of the king. We should anticipate it. 2 Timothy 4 and verse number 8, Paul says, you know what? There's a crown that's coming for all of those that love his appearing. And we should wait for and anticipate the return of the king with a blessed hope, Titus chapter 2 and verse 13. Thirdly, let's encourage each other as we prepare for his return. The thought of the king's return is spoken of in the Thessalonian letters, 1 and 2 Thessalonians, as a word of encouragement. Paul writes about Jesus returning and says, hey, comfort each other with these words. His return is going to be sudden, but it's not going to be a surprise for us as his followers. We're going to gladly anticipate it and look forward to it because we know that he's coming to take us home to be with him forever on a new heaven and new earth, a place of righteousness a place of new creation. And we should look forward to that as His followers. Let's encourage each other. Fourthly, don't love the comfort of this world. Too many of us as Christians have become way too comfortable living right here instead of preparing for the next world to come. Christians are not to be in love with this present world. Paul speaks about how that there was some of his companions that had fallen in love with the present world, and they'd stopped following Jesus the way they should, 2 Timothy 4 and verse 10. Instead, we ought to follow in the steps of the forefathers of faith like Abraham, who confessed that he's a foreigner and a stranger in this world and looked forward to a better country. Hebrews 11 talks about this. So let's not fall too in love with this world or the comforts of this world, but instead realize that we are only temporary residents and we got a far better home that we're preparing for. And then finally, number five, let's keep doing the work that Jesus left us to do. You know, whenever we're so unsettled by the darkness of this world around us, it can be tempting to throw our hands up in resignation and despair and just be unplugged from the world and live isolated and disengaged. There were some Christians in the first century that were so anticipating the return of Jesus that they started living very lazy lives and taking advantage of people. You see that in 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, and Paul rebukes them strongly and says, don't grow weary in well-doing, but instead continue to live in preparation for Jesus' return, yes, but keep doing the work Jesus left you to do. We can become so passionate about the King's return that we stop being effective in the world right now. Jesus, when he ascended to heaven, you remember in Acts chapter 1, the angels appeared to the disciples and they said to them, why are you gazing into heaven? You need to get busy. You need to do the work Jesus left you to do. So let's remember that as we prepare for the King's return. We got work to do. And even in the midst of an unsettled and confusing and uncertain world, Jesus has work for us to be doing as His followers, so let's do it. If we live anticipating the King's return, we will be more effective making a difference in the world today. I want to share with you a few quotes from church leaders and Christians and scholars from years gone by that have helped me greatly to consider how that we need to live prepared for the King's return, but making a difference today because we look forward to it. C.S. Lewis once said, if you read history, you'll find that Christians who did the most for the present world were precisely the ones who thought most of the next world. It is since Christians have largely ceased to think of the other world that they've become so ineffective in this world. So Lewis is saying, listen, you don't need to think less of the King's return. You need to think more of the King's return. And whenever you live thinking and anticipating His return, you're going to be more effective living right now and making a difference for the King in the world in which we now live. Secondly, G.K. Chesterton once said, we must be fond of another world in order to have something to change this world into. That is such an encouraging and helpful quote for me, that I need to live informed and prepared for Jesus' return, so that I can live to make this world a better place in anticipation of the renewal of all things and the restoration and resurrection day that is coming. So let's go out there and let's make a difference. Let's see what we can do to serve and to help people in this time of need, in this time of crisis. Let's live very soberly and let's live prepared for the King's return. But let's go out there and let's make a difference. And let's not be afraid of the things out there in this world that can't harm the soul, but instead, let's go make a difference and serve people and help people in their time of need. I hope that you'll do that. Remember, the King is returning, and we don't know the time or the hour, but let's live and let's prepare for that day.